Hi, this is Eric Metaxas. Breakpoint is a listener-supported ministry of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. If this program helps you think more clearly about what's happening in the world around you, please give to support this important work. And thanks to a special matching grant, every dollar you give before June 30th will be doubled. Visit breakpoint.org and click Give. That's breakpoint.org.
Son, every day I get to speak with someone who has earned the title Senator, Representative, Governor, and Ambassador. You've done a lot with your life.
But my favorite one's Grandpa.
Grandpa. Well, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, I've got three grandchildren and hoping for 25.
Well, if you have a guest, my guest today on the Breakpoint podcast is none other than Sam Brownback. Ambassador Brownback is the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, was appointed in February of 2018 after a pretty significant struggle for a position that I think many people thought would just kind of be, let's get somebody there to do the job. Really, the Ambassador at Large position was created. You helped lead that charge.
I did. About 20 years ago, actually, exactly 20 years ago to create it, because we didn't get, the foreign policy community wouldn't address issues of religious freedom. They were just kind of standing back on it, not that engaged, didn't want to deal with issues of faith. And we said, you've got to. And then really forced it by the statute.
And it's a position, too. Even after it was created, it was vacant for an unusually long time.
It was. I think, again, kind of administrations and going, do we really want this? Plus, the foreign policy establishment, a lot of it's iffy on it, maybe at best, because they look at it and going, we just want the desk people that deal with Burma or China or Nigeria, we just want them to deal with this, not somebody specific on this topic. Because if you're specific on this topic, you're going to raise topics specifically here. And the regional desk and the countries were going, we really don't like a person in our hair raising these issues. But it's been appointed under this administration, not only appointed, but they want to aggressively pursue the topic and push the topic.
And it's a good thing. I mean, we have covered on Breakpoint for years that this year is the worst year on record for religious freedom, according to groups like Open Doors. And we said that in 2014, we said it in 2015, said it in 2016. And really, when it comes to the treatment of religious minorities around the world, the big picture isn't good right now.
Big picture isn't good. And you can go almost any day, the big global media, and one of the key stories will be about some religious angle persecution that's taking place. The discussion that's happening right now, or soon to happen, between the president and North Korea president. There's a huge amount of persecution of Christians in North Korea. Put in gulags. I mean, really, you can go around the world. I'm headed to Nigeria soon. And there was 1,000 civilians killed this year in the Middle Belt. Most of them people of faith, most of them Christians.
Yeah, I'm a member of one of the Anglican Renewal Churches here in the United States and in Colorado Springs, and our bishop is a Nigerian, so we're in a Nigerian church, so I appreciate the struggle there. And that really highlights, I mean, you know, really the worst actors when it comes to the persecution of religious minorities are either, you know, secularist states like North Korea, I mean, highly secular states in which the government kind of replaces God, or of course, we have the struggle with radical Islamic forces as well.
You do. And unfortunately, you kind of got the situation just goes around the world. In Burma, you've got really this campaign of saying, you know, look, we want to keep it mostly for Buddhists, and they're running the Muslims out of the south and the Christians out of the north. So you just got this scale and conflict that's going on everywhere. India, the amount of violence that's taking place towards people in the faith community is high, even though the Indian government and in the Constitution, it guarantees religious freedom. So it's one of those things that really takes a lot of vigilance, and it takes an administration willing to push it. Because oftentimes religious freedom issues just get set to the side, and they said, well, it's important, but our bilateral relationship is more important on economic or military or some other sort of topic, and this one gets shunted aside. But this administration is going to push it strongly.
So we're recording this podcast here really as this historic summit between President Trump and the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, is set to begin. So when it airs, we're actually going to know what happens. But talk a little bit about that, and where does religious freedom come to play? I mean, obviously, as we wrote on Breakpoint a couple months ago, that a denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is a win, no matter how you look at it, right? I mean, this would be a good thing. And yet, we could see that achieved and still see some of our brothers and sisters, in that region of the world still be under the heavy hand of persecution because of their Christian beliefs. You know, how do you advise this administration? What do you expect to come out of these historic talks when it comes to religious freedom?
Well, I expect there to be more freedom, regardless kind of what the ultimate conclusion is or how the talks go at all. And you saw the three people coming out of North Korea with the Secretary of State right. on that trip back, and two of them were there as people of faith in North Korea, and the administration busted them free. So you've already got really something tangible that's happening there. I also remember the United States, we really stand for freedom globally. And the Reagan model of standing for freedom is often you lead with human rights. It's Ronald Reagan standing in front of the Berlin Wall, Mr. Gorbachev bringing down this wall. It's Ronald Reagan talking about that wall was not meant to keep people out, but to keep people in. And what's happening in North Korea? You got this big DMZ militarized mm-hmm. area. Is it designed to keep people out, or is it designed to keep people in?
Right.
And you're saying, well, let the people move. Let them go where they want to go. And you've seen a large number of North Koreans have fled the country, gone to South Korea, some to the United States and other places.
You said earlier that it takes an administration that really believes in this. I think that was one of the concerns a lot of people of faith had about then-candidate Trump. Is, there was he was certainly surrounding himself with religious leaders. There was some skepticism. Is this, strategic, instrumental? Is he really becoming serious about issues of faith? And the first executive order came from, the president. And honestly, I was one of the critics thinking, there really wasn't a lot of substance, and was told kind of to, well, wait, more's coming. And I've got to say, more came. More has
Didn't
come from
it?
This administration.
My word. I mean, just look at alone, moving of the embassy to Jerusalem, just that one alone, and I don't even consider anything else. That is a huge step forward that every president before that had campaigned saying they would do it, didn't do it because the foreign policy establishment told them not to do it
right.
because it was going to be too provocative. And this president says, no, I said I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. He did it. He will do that. He will act. People can quibble about a lot of different things with the administration, but this man will act, and he will push, and he'll be aggressive about it. And that's something we need. We're going to hold the first ever ministerial. So these are secretaries of state from around the world, Washington, D.C., July 24th, 26th, to talk about religious freedom. First ever to have that. And we're going to be pushing this topic aggressively with secretaries of state, non-government organizations, religious communities around the world.
So as you take the temperature of where the rest of the world is on religious freedom, I mean, obviously, not in terms of kind of the status. I mean, we already mentioned that, organization after organization kind of identifies each year as the worst year on record when it comes to persecution of religious minorities. But in terms of the concern that you see in other nations, especially our allies, is there a growing interest in also addressing this? I mean, are you getting a good response for this summit? You said July. The fact that we have an ambassador at large for international religious freedom is a great first step. And I want to talk about your priorities. Are you seeing that same sort of prioritization by other nations right now?
Yes, in some places and no in others. I mean, you are seeing it in some places. We're seeing some countries open up that have historically been very closed.
Right.
But you're also seeing some places be very aggressive against religious freedom, like China. Which is really harmful in their own country, and then projects that around the world against religious freedom. So it's mixed. I'm hearing out of Saudi Arabia leadership things I never thought I would hear from the crown prince that's
wow,
coming in.
That's great news.
It is. Now, that's a word.
Right.
He's saying something. I want to see the actions. But I never thought I would see the words. In Iran, you're really seeing a lot of things going on and bubbling underneath the surface of fomenting for change happening. You know, on the other hand, I've mentioned places like what's happening in China and Nigeria that, you know, are very concerning. And some of the stuff that the Chinese are doing in Western China is just really concerning on the nature of the scaling up of the police state to really track people all the time to try to prevent them from practicing their faith. It's just deeply concerning what they're doing to the Uyghurs, which is primarily a Muslim population, trying to get them not to practice their faith anymore, not to fast during Ramadan. You can't. There's a certain number of Muslim names they can't even name their children.
Wow.
That's wrong. But they're scaling it up. And the Chinese, remember now, they're going around the world saying, look, you don't have to follow the American model of democracy and open markets. We have a model that's equally as valid in their mind. And it's a more of a mercantilist economic model. But it's also the state has the right, not the individual. And they're marketing a different model to ours around the world.
Walk us through some of your priorities. Again, my guest here on the Breakpoint podcast is the Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, former governor of Kansas, representative, senator, grandpa.
Yes.
Don't want to forget that. He's done it all. But talk us through what you hope to accomplish in your tenure. What are the priorities that you have? The things that you think for this office to be a successful office, what are the priorities?
Well, my biggest one is for the gates of religious freedom to fly open around the world so that we would see nations open up to religious freedom. We're working right now with Uzbekistan, and they're right now a country of particular concern, one of the worst actors, but they're moving to open up the whole country to religious freedom. And it's because of the philosophy is strong, but it's also because we're showing in the data that if you want your country to have less terrorism, one of the keys is to have more religious freedom. If you want your country to grow economically, one of the keys is religious freedom. It unleashes spiritual capital.
Well, that's a connection that I think a lot of people miss, and I was going to get to that. But since you brought it up, let's talk about that, because religious liberty in the United States has kind of long been part of our heritage. I mean, this is baseball, apple pie, religious freedom. It's just part of us. But right now, the branding's bad. Religious freedom for many people is code language for a license to discriminate. It's special interest. The branding problem in other nations is probably different, and it's probably bad in other senses. But the connection to religious freedom with other freedoms, describe some of that. I'm not sure a lot of people understand how these freedoms are interrelated.
Yeah, and I don't know if they do either. But you're now starting to see it in the data. The world's concerned about terrorism. The United States is concerned about terrorism. A number of other countries around the world will say, okay, we're concerned about terrorism, therefore, we're going to put down this particular faith community, and we're going to watch, and we're going to limit what they can do. When in the data, it's saying that's one of the worst things you can do, because as a government puts its heavy hand on a religious group, they tend to fight you a lot more, and you produce more terrorists. Whereas the data is saying that countries that are more religiously free have less terrorism. The other thing, and this is one that really applies a lot in the United States, the first one does, but this one too, is the releasing of spiritual capital. So imagine America without religious freedom. And the hospitals and the schools and the welfare work that people do from the faith-based community, the help of people that get out of prison to get back on their feet that's done by the faith-based community, much of it very quietly,
right?
Not known. But if you remove that from this nation, it is billions of dollars of activity and lots of it voluntary time. Just one little example of this. I started when I was governor of Kansas, I started a program of mentoring of people coming out of prison. I wanted to get a mentor for everybody that was released from prison to get them back on their feet. And we got it done for most people that wanted one. It reduced our recidivism rate in half for those people just coming out. And most of the people that signed up were faith-oriented people. They were doing it because they felt a calling to do that. That's what I mean, where you're unleashing a spiritual capital that you want unleashed because of all the good that it does for people. around the world.
Well, I was stunned to see the cover of USA Today after Hurricane Harvey, you know, tore through Houston, you know, make that admission that, you know, if you're receiving a blanket, if you're receiving a water bottle, you're probably, you know, that's a FEMA resource. You're probably getting it from the hands of somebody who works for a nonprofit, probably a faith-based nonprofit. And I think, you know, one organization totaled up the contribution of religious organizations just in America. It's like $1.7 trillion. I mean, it would be like the 14th largest country in the world if you made it its own economy. That's an amazing thing. And we kind of take that for granted, the amount of capital that's released because people of faith are volunteering, you know, the Cajun Army, you know, getting in their boats and going to Texas. I mean, that's stuff that when you think other countries don't have that.
They don't. And they're looking at it and saying, I want that.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Uzbekistan is saying, we need more colleges here.
Because these are things that government also can't provide themselves.
Or has limited resources to be able to, well, they'll do what they can, but they can't do enough of it. Mm. And plus, you deal with then delivering the services with a heart. Then it's people with a heart that's coming there with that blanket. And they're not only given a blanket, they're given hope, and they're probably giving a hug to somebody and just saying, you know what, we're pulling for you. We're here. And that hope is something that just is so powerful in an individual and is so terrible when it's lost.
Yeah, that's right. And then the transformation you mentioned there. I mean, you know, the prison work that you created space for in Kansas. I mean, that's obviously preaching our language at the Colson Center because of Chuck Colson's long work there. But you have the transformational potential, again, of a life change that's then going to put a stop to these kind of multi-generational problems. We celebrated a few weeks ago at the Wilberforce Weekend, Robert Woodson Sr. I mean, just what an amazing guy.
He is.
It was amazing. So many of our attendees were like, I've never heard of this guy. How do we not know who he is?
I worked with him in Kansas as governor. Paul Ryan worked with him a huge
amount. Paul Ryan's
worked
closely. He actually gave a nice tribute to him at the weekend. It was wonderful.
He should. And they've got in this last tax reform bill these sort of poverty bonds that they're going to be able to, people are going to be able to invest in low-income areas, get money back on a capital gains free basis for a 10-year time period, and they think that's going to attract a lot of capital into these low economic communities. What Robert did with us, helping us and redesigning our welfare programs, is we tripled the number of people getting out of poverty in the welfare, out of their welfare programs in Kansas, tripled them. And their income didn't just go up a little bit, it went up on average over 120%.
Wow.
And you're just going, this is what you ought to be doing. Isn't our objective to get people out of poverty, not to keep them on a pittance from the government?
Right.
And it works. And Robert was right in the middle of helping us design those programs.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, Christians don't often make a great case for themselves. We're not our best, you know, own marketers. But this is stuff that people need to know, because this is why religious freedom matters. It's not so that we can protect our territory. It's not that we can, you know, kind of have our own rights. It's not a special interest. It's the world is a better place with religious freedom, because the world is a better place when Christians are freely contributing to the public good, addressing evils, and helping the victims, and so on.
And remember, the government's role in this is not to pick a winner or a loser. It's not to support a particular ideology or another. The government's role is to protect the right so that the individual can practice any faith or no faith at all. But the government's role is to strongly protect this right.
So your job is to spread this around the world. I'm going to ask you this question. I know your charter and your position as the ambassador at large for international religious freedom is a focus on international. But I've got to ask you this, and you know, answer it how you can without getting fired. Do you sense that there's a strong enough commitment to religious freedom domestically, even as you're trying to take this kind of historic good that America has protected and celebrated and advanced around the world? Are you confident in where we're at in the United States in protecting religious liberty?
Well, one of the last bills that President Obama signed was the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act, which was the follow-on to the original International Religious Freedom Act, passed, I think, unanimously in the House and the Senate, and Republicans in control of both, and signed by a Democrat president. So there was strong bipartisan support for this position, and it's exclusively international, and the domestic issue is left out explicitly because they didn't want to get into the divisive nature of the domestic discussion. You've had the recent cake case that came up from Colorado.
That's right.
But this job and my charge are completely international, so I really can't, by statute, comment on those issues. Now.
Well, I don't want you to violate that. We are thankful for the wonderful long work of Frank Wolf. I mean, he was tireless in his advocating of this position. Close friend of Chuck Colson's, winner of the Wilberforce Award years ago. He's one of those guys you'd love to give it to more than once if you can figure out how to do it, because it's great. Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I can say on record, some groups have listed the United States as not a country of concern in any sense, as the countries of particular concern that you have, identify each year out of your office, which are, we're talking about some of the great human rights abusers on the planet, in the history of the planet, even in some cases. I don't want to conflate those two issues, but people have, organizations that are watching this outside of the government have pointed and said, there are restrictions, and had this case with Jack Phillips gone the other direction, that would have been a big deal. In terms of the role of our ability, as Chuck Colson would say, not just to believe what we want in the privacy of our own heads, our own hearts, and our own houses of worship, but the ability to take those deeply held convictions into the public square, to order our public lives around them. And that's kind of one of the classic ideas of religious freedom, is that we're responsible to something higher than government. We're responsible to government, but first and foremost, we're responsible to God through our own conscience.
Absolutely. And I mean, those are in our founding documents.
It is.
Those are the
mm-hmm.
people that came here first. These are rights inherent to a person because you are a person, because of the dignity you have as a person. They're a right that's given to you by God, not by government. And that no government has a right to interfere with that God-given right, and that government exists to protect the right. It doesn't give you the right, but it's there to protect the right.
And that's a very important distinction.
Oh, it is. And also, just really, when I get a chance to and argue with people around the world on this, this is the place the government wants to be. You don't want to be in the business of picking winners or losers or advocating for one and not another. And there may be some short-term political gains you can get at one time or another, but long-term, this is going to come back to haunt you. You want to be in the space to protect the right. And then everybody's in a better position long-term, and you want that to be the hallmark of your nation. And you'll attract more people there, too, because you protect that right and don't pick who wins and who loses.
Well, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, I want to ask you one more question. A lot of folks who have listened to Chuck Colson for years, who listen to Breakpoint, who are listening to the Breakpoint podcast right now, they're the sort of people that we described earlier, where they're the ones that are adding that spiritual capital by volunteering here, there, and everywhere, by running into floods and plagues and illnesses and broken communities, and they want to do something. And a lot of times we see, our persecuted brothers and sisters as Christians on the other side of the planet, or persecuted religious minorities, like you mentioned, the Muslims, the Hindus that aren't Hindu enough in India, groups like this. What can we do as kind of someone leading on this front on international religious freedom? What would you ask committed followers of Jesus who are committed to this idea of religious freedom? What would you ask them to do to contribute?
One of the things I've been asking people is to in your own faith community, in your own church, go in and pick a country that you're interested in, or that your church is, and get several people in the church on board, and then learn something about it and invite somebody there from that or that knows that, because chances are, as diverse as this country is, you're going to be able to find somebody with direct contact or have a delegation go yourself and then really sponsor that. In northern Iraq, the Chaldean community in Detroit is helping rebuild that area that was destroyed by ISIS and the genocide against the Christians and the Yazidis. And this is a group of people, a lot of them in Detroit, that are coming back in there and helping to rebuild it. Fantastic that they're doing it. But that situation exists in so many places around the world. So, I mean, get your church in and really engage it in that particular area and place, and you'll be able to find it. Second thing, and I just really deeply ask people to do, is pray.
Yeah.
We need people's prayers on this, because the situation, while it's hopeful, it's dire for many, and the level of persecution, the number of deaths annually around the world, is the It's the highest at any time. The information I have seen from reputable sources, it's the highest it's ever been for a number of communities of faith, and certainly the Christian community.
Yeah, and this, we've had the, I think, the unique opportunity to get some personal faces on those numbers. You know, when you think of Pastor Saeed, Pastor Andrew Brunson, some of the others, and to know their names and to know their families, that's an important part to kind of humanize this, I think.
And it does. I was at Pastor Brunson's trial and visited with his wife there, who is just a rock.
Wow.
On this, Noreen. And she's asking for people's prayers. But she doesn't just ask for it for them. She asks for it for Turkey, for the country. They're still in their heart, they're advocating for a country, even though a government of which from there has imprisoned her husband. She wants her husband out. We want her husband out. We're fighting for her husband to get out. But still, they're asking for people to pray for Turkey.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been an honor to have you stop by here at the Breakpoint studios. I'm just so grateful, first of all, that this position was created, that Vice President Pence cast that deciding vote to send you over the edge. And you know, we were all, I mentioned this earlier, but we, all of us at the Colson Center, were very, very encouraged by your selection by the president as the ambassador at large for international religious freedom. We care deeply about this issue. We'll keep talking about it, and we'll pray that God continues to open doors and expand the work that you do. And it's an honor to be able to speak with you.
My pleasure. God bless you guys, too, for all your work, and what a legacy. Chuck Colson, I knew him well, and just was such a dynamic and outspoken and clear voice, and used such a bad thing he had been a part of to make into so much good. It really was amazing.
And that's the other thing that faith brings to the table, is that possibility of redemption. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Hi, this is Shane Morris. As Eric Metaxas mentioned at the beginning of the show, we'd appreciate it if you would consider making a donation to the Ministry of Breakpoint during the month of June. All you need to do is go to breakpoint.org and click on Give. Thanks for listening and for your support.